The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hi, Paul.
Wow. The killing box.
The killing box.
Say it with me so I can sync up our things perfectly. Ready? I'm going to say 3, 2, 1, the killing box. Three, two, one, the killing box. Yeah. Okay. Okay, that was a huge, I mean, that's a huge episode. It's obviously the season.
Yes.
It's obviously the season,
mid-season
finale. And we talked about this last time, but the kind of narrative device of people turning and heading back into the flames.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a continuation of that idea, right? I mean, obviously now Kellerman is on their team and they're going after Reynolds. So like, it's like, they've, like you were talking about during the rewatch, oh, the onion peeling, like who's behind the person behind the person.
Yep.
Like
yep.
At first they were like, we're going to get you exonerated. Let's fight like hell. Now they're going to take the president down.
Now it's time to take down the president of the United States. Amazing. And I mean, the ace in the hole is brilliant. We'll get to this after the index so people have a chance to listen to the the rewatch. But do you want to start by just explaining to people what a mid-season finale was?
So,
because it's very much a live TV event.
Yeah. So with shows that had about 22 episodes, they would do, I feel like maybe 24 or Prison Break invented this. Is that
I honestly don't know.
That they would
maybe
do two things. They would take a break after episode, let's say 13. And it would go off the air for maybe a month. There'd be a lot of press around it, and that episode would have some huge twists and turns and, oh my gosh, what happens next moments. And essentially what it does, it accomplishes a lot of things. It builds suspense for a show that people needed to see every week.
Yeah.
Right? A kind of water cooler show.
This is why you have to tune in live.
Yeah. And then it allows people to get caught up.
Yep.
It allows production to get caught up, which is a huge thing. It allows the writers, production
the
on the ground, and the editors to get caught up because, you know, laying track on a moving train is very complicated. And it allows you to build a new audience because they kind of, I remember them doing, God bless residuals, is they would replay the first half of the season while we were off the air.
It was almost like winter holiday reruns,
you know,
because I think the other thing was, let's not burn episodes when people are going to be on vacation in Cancun and not watching live TV. So, and
that's
I remember there
smart.
Being
so it made sense
media
of a, yep.
around it,
mm-hmm.
you know, like the I've got actually a couple of videos of some stuff from season one of just like that I took of like magazines. Like I think we were on the cover of EW and it was like the show was back for the second half of the season, and so it was another press blitz and stuff.
And I remember them advertising it as mid-season finale.
Absolutely.
So then people are really like, oh, I gotta get caught up, I gotta watch it, da, da, da. And then obviously this is a huge twist.
Yeah, and it definitely sets up for a show as plot dense as Prison Break. It sets up, so the first half of the second season was, we left them on an airstrip running for their lives. What do they do now? And the second half of the season, as you pointed out, is now the driver is we're going to turn around and we're going to take it. We're going to take the fight to them. And so, okay, so with that in mind, so much changed. And I'm relatively sure that in the filming of this episode, this is when I realized I was pregnant.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
This is so really a mid-season, really a, lots of twists.
There were a few plot twists, some on camera and some off. So yeah, do you want to index us so that we...
Yes. Ready for the Calistine index for episode 213. The Killing Box first aired on November 27th, 2006. You're right, so it's right around the holidays, which is presumably Thanksgiving. Written by the great Zach Estrin and directed by Bobby Roth. Fun fact, Bobby Roth directed more episodes of Prison Break than any other director.
Wild, that's right?
15. Even Kevin Hooks, our producing director for most of the first four seasons, came in at 14. That's a whole lot. The next closest directors came in at 5. So Bobby, big influence on the show, is what we're saying. And episode 213 was Bobby's fifth. That show drew 9.62 million viewers, exactly the same as last week's episode against the regular competition in the 8 p.m. slot.
To recap the mid-season finale extravaganza, this is long, but there's a lot that happens. Although, worth pointing out, no C-note in this episode, no haywire in this episode. So much happened with the brothers that there wasn't a ton of real estate for that.
Right.
So when we left Michael and Lincoln...
You okay?
Excuse me, I've got a frog in my throat. Yep. When we left our heroes, Michael and Lincoln had been T-boned by Mahone, who's intent on killing them. So when we pick up, before Mahone can take his shot, surprise, the police arrive, the Border Patrol. They arrive, they arrest the brothers. Kellerman convinces Kim to give him one last chance to kill the brothers during their police transfer back to Fox River. Kim gives Kellerman permission, and then, another surprise, Kim double-crosses him, instructing Mahone to kill Kellerman after the brothers are dead. But when the brothers escape in the police transfer, which is not actually super surprising because that's kind of their thing, Kellerman, in another surprise, shoots Mahone and offers his services to Michael and Lincoln so that the three of them can escape together. And what do you say? Something about the bitch?
Take the bitch down.
Let's take the bitch down. So that's the giant sort of story that takes us through the show in what can best be described as an object lesson in the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Uh-huh.
In other news, Bellick is accused of Geary's murder, does a plea deal, chooses to serve his sentence in Fox River so that the COs there can take care of him. But in another surprise, he discovers that the new Fox River warden will give him zero special privileges, and he is sent to Avocado's cell.
By the return of Phil Van Leer.
By the return of the wonderful CEO Phil Van Leer, and the return also of shooting a prison that looks a lot like Joliet,
lot like even Joliet. Though
by now we were in Dallas.
Yeah.
Elsewhere, Teabag starts seducing a woman who works at the post office, Sweet Denise, as a means to locate Mrs. Hollander's house. The woman finds out who he is, so he kills her, which is not super surprising because that's kind of his thing. What is surprising, or surprised, duh, is the look on Mrs. Hollander's face when Teabag shows up at her house. At the same time, Dr. Sarah becomes desperate to change her appearance to avoid detection and DIYs a makeover.
In Iraq war news on December 1st, a memo leaked from the White House in which former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld admitted that the U.S. had more or less botched the Iraq war. Which is
the first time anyone said it out loud.
Admitted that. And in global human rights news on November 30th, South Africa's Civil Union Act of 2006 legalized same-sex marriage in that country, making it the first country in Africa to do so and the fifth country in the world before the United States did it.
Before the United States did it. That's right. Although I am curious about what the first four countries were. I didn't look that one up. In Indiana Jones news, on November 25th, a major breakthrough was made in deciphering the Antikythera device. That device is a real piece of actual 2nd century BC technology known as the world's largest analog computer.
Oldest.
Suck it. Sorry, oldest. You're right. The world's oldest analog computer. Thank you. take that, Bill Gates. So the Antikythera device is also the basis for the Dial of Destiny, which led us straight into the most recent Indiana Jones film. Go science. And in magical realism news, November 24th was the English language release of the film Pan's Labyrinth, which is one of my all-time favorite movies.
I cannot believe that movie's that old. That is freaking me out.
Yeah. It's so astonishing. It was directed by Guillermo del Toro. It was a masterpiece. It would go on to win 3 Academy Awards and be widely praised by critics around the world. So that's what was going on around the time the episode aired. We'll be right back to talk about the episode itself.
We'll be right back to talk about the episode itself.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Save $100 on the Craftsman V26 Tool Power Tool Combo Kit, now at $199. No matter what the project is, Craftsman's high-quality, high-performance products empower you to build on. Visit Lowe's and check out the full line of Craftsman tools today. Valid through 7/9 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. Maximum initial battery voltage measured without a workload is 20 volts. Nominal voltage is 18. Lowe's knows you don't want to sacrifice reliability for savings. This July 4th, get up to 40% off select LG appliances and purchase 2 or 3 select major appliances to get an additional 10% off. Save big on LG, America's most reliable line of home appliances at Lowe's. Based on independent reliability surveys 2021 to 2024 and select major appliances as compared to competing manufacturers offering full appliance lines. See associate for more details. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Exclusions apply. Valid 6/18 through 7/9.
And we're back.
I am looking up Denise, who is played by
Silva
Kalajdzian.
Has she been in anything else?
Who was married to Jude Ciccolella, who was a series regular on 24. Interesting enough. She
was heartbreaking. So while you're looking this up, she played Denise.
She was in a movie I was in. That's why I recognize her.
Oh my God. It's 6 Degrees of Paul Edelstein.
Return to Zero. In 2014, she's also been on every TV show imaginable, Prison Break, and then after Prison Break, Big Love, Desperate Housewife, Bones, Cold Case ER, Rizzoli and Isles, Southland, NCIS, CSI, Crime Scene Investigation, Boned, on and on.
What's her name again?
Silva, S-Y-L-V-A.
Silva.
Kalajdzian, K-E-L-E-G-I-A-N. She's wonderful.
She's Armenian. She was fantastic. And the thing that was going on with her and Teabag in this episode really, to me, sort of spoke to the heart of the episode in a lot of ways. This idea that of like the tender things we're trying to protect and connect. Does that make sense?
Like, yeah, but go on, say it.
Well, I mean, we were talking about it in the rewatch, but there's this beautiful moment where Denise genuinely kind of like opens up and you see Teabag like receive it and love it and want to be gentle and safe with someone's broken bits because he's so broken.
Yeah.
There's that moment between Michael and Lincoln of, do you regret it? There's that vulnerable moment of Sarah talking to, leaving that message for Michael of saying, I need you, that you pointed out as the first time she's ever said. There's, Kellerman, I think, expresses it differently, but there's a massive pivot for him of like, now I'm out in the cold. I think you see a lot of it in Mahone, this very broken part of himself that he's trying to navigate and protect and that makes him vulnerable. And I think What am I saying? It's the vulnerabilities that make us, it's our soft parts that make us vulnerable. It's also the only reason we care about these characters.
Right. And you know, the even though it's said sarcastically, Kim says, you know, so we can all get back to our families. You know,
yeah,
Balak says, I want to be near my mother, which is obviously a ploy to get to Fox River. But there is this motive, you know, there's these peaks into the motivations. There's also, I think the thing with, sorry, what were you going to say?
Well, I think it's a ploy to get near his mother, but it also is kind of true. I mean, what I think is smart is that what I love about Zach's writing, there's a version of this that's just action, double crossing, betrayal. It's very smart. It's very slick. It's very da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. But he also threads through these just like these moments where you love Denise.
Yeah. And I think
who you're never going to see again.
And I think as you say that, what I realize is that, you know, this would work, right? As Mahone wants to kill the boys because they've humiliated him. Mm-hmm. Kellerman wants to kill Kim because he's cut him out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, T-Bag wants to kill Denise because he's a psychopath. They're, all those things are actually to get to something else. Mm-hmm. Mahone needs to kill the boy so he can get home. Kellerman wants to get back, go through Kim so he can get to Reynolds. Like there are these, mm-hmm. you know, T-Bag has to get through Denise to get to Mrs. Hollander. And so there's the kind of laying in the humanity, even in the midst of these, for lack of a better term, dastardly deeds.
And I would even argue
that
it crosses his mind that she's the next Mrs. Hollander.
You think?
Like, if she hadn't seen the picture, I really wish you hadn't seen that. I want to believe, and I don't know why, but I want to believe that he genuinely, like, would have given it a shot. Mm. That he found someone broken who will accept what he has to give, and they can be sort of broken and sweet together. And she idolizes him, and he wants that. And that, like, there's almost that. That's what I always love about T-Bag, is that there's this sense that, like, not that I'm suggesting anyone should just overlook all the dead bodies and pedophilia and horrible things he's done. But you do get a sense that there is genuinely a part of him that wants to be rehabilitated and wants to be deeply embedded in a safe family dynamic. And maybe if he had that, he'd stop killing people.
Yeah.
Sorry. I feel also, like, again,
is he capable? And, you know, the answer seems to be no.
And I said this on a rewatch. I'm going to say it again. I freaking love Kellerman in the cold. Kellerman in the cold with his kind of like half wise guy, half like.
He seems like, different. He seems different to you.
Yeah, it feels like he's a little bit like, all right, we'll do it this way. Hold my beer. Like, there's a reluctant vigilante vibe to it that I like a lot. And I misread it at the beginning as, oh, he's got Kim right where he wants him and he's got a plan. And by the end, you're like, oh, shit, those are both true things, but the plan is not. The plan is I am done taking orders from you.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just think it's really cool. It's really fun.
It was a huge thing for me personally. I didn't realize. Well, when I read it, I remember being in my apartment in Dallas when I read it. And being so fucking psyched, for lack of a better
term. Yeah.
You know, there's a thing too where there's again the meta thing, which is like Kellerman is stepping into the boys' lives, right? And it's a step up for him in a way. And like I was moving from B story to A story. Like,
okay,
it was
fair.
It's just like, oh,
yeah, yeah.
Oh, I get to go play with the starters. You know,
right.
Not that there was
you're on the lineup.
Yeah, not that there was a hierarchy in that way, but you're just like, oh, I'm in the A story now.
Like, that's amazing. I would never have read a script that way because I wasn't new enough to it. But like, it's a smart reaction.
I don't know if I could have identified it that way, but it was the feeling of like, you know how we talk about all the time. We talked about it with Lane last week. Like we were all in these different shows.
Yep.
Suddenly, yeah. I'm in a show with them.
Yeah.
Like suddenly I'm in
like, kind of for the first time.
For 100% for the first time. I mean, I don't. I think
but
I had
you, like.
I had a one scene.
Ran around a parking lot with Lane. I mean, not with Lane, with Link.
I mean,
I
put my hand over his mouth. That was basically it.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, yeah.
So it was exciting on that front. And then I remember feeling the explosion of, maybe it was online. I don't remember if it was like Television Without Pity or what, but it was the explosion of attention.
Oh, interesting.
Given, like, you know, my character had had massive effect on the storyline before, but not like that.
Well, and also you're on the side the fans are on now.
Correct.
You're on Team Michael instead of against Team Michael.
This is where I got the, I hated you so much and then.
Oh, wow. And it would have been pretty instant. I mean, because when we're shooting this.
I also, Yeah.
Just time-wise.
Oh, yeah.
We were shooting this in late October. We were shooting this in early November. And it aired 4 weeks later.
Yeah. I also think that, to your point, I wouldn't say on purpose, but these things all work together in good writing, is that Kellerman's been out in the cold for a couple of episodes. And that does garner him a little sympathy. You know, like you said, mm-hmm. by putting a boss and an enemy above Kellerman, I'm not saying this is why they do it, but suddenly he's not the bad guy pulling the strings. There's a bad guy above pulling the strings. He's the victim of the own same kind of process. So he becomes a more sympathetic character.
And you just saw him. You saw it cost him something to do his job. In the fact that he didn't shoot Sarah when he could have, there's a little bit of humanity. And I think the show is very good about opening a crack of humanity and then leaning all the way into it.
Yeah.
Not to mention, you're about to be a lot less bored in Dallas just because, like, you know, you had been working like a day or two and all of a sudden it's like, oh, now you're kind of full time.
Yeah, it was very exciting. It was very fun.
That's awesome.
Talk about the scene on the street where you call Michael and leave that message. And like you said, there's this really cool thing that Bobby Roth did as the director, where it's pushing in on Michael behind bars. They can see the phone.
Oh.
They can see the phone, and it's almost like he can hear the message that she's leaving. And the message is, I don't think we've heard Sarah say this before. She's like, I need you, which is different. Mm-hmm. Then you have to help me. You fucked my life up. What is your plan? Mm-hmm. I think she feels she doesn't trust anybody else. She's injured. Mm-hmm. She's almost been killed. She needs him. I need you. It's a big turn for her. It feels like, or a big turn might not be the right word. Do you remember it?
Well, I remember thinking, we talked about this a little bit on the rewatch. I remember thinking, it's one of those moments when I think, so she's walking down the street.
Yeah.
She's left a message for Michael and said, I need you to be okay. I didn't leave you. It's it's all the things Michael would want to hear. Mm. And of course he can't hear them because his phone is in a plastic bag in police custody. Mm. But then she sees that they've been captured. That's like playing in the window of a on TV in the window of a shop.
Yeah,
and it's that moment I think where the whole world turns
for her
a little bit, where it's like where it's like, oh, all of these things. There's just everything's been taken away. She's almost died, like the most traumatic event of her life. Yeah. Everyone she has trusted has turned out not to be trustworthy, including Lance. And I think Michael all of a sudden becomes her best option. And I think through it all, she also kind of comes away with this, like, and I, whatever I feel for him, I can't get rid of.
Okay. This is what I just wrote down. Does seeing him on TV, the fact that they've gotten busted, does that motivate that feeling? Because I was...
No, I think the feeling of I'm in too deep with this guy to go anywhere but with him, and I'm not safe, that comes from what happened with Kellerman.
Right.
I think that's that. And that started right when she got back into the car to go back to him in Gila.
Yeah.
I think what motivates that sense of, oh my God, I'm completely alone in this, is seeing that they've been arrested. Because, I mean, he's in custody. He's going back to Fox River. There is now no one. It goes from, I need to find Michael, to, I need to hide. So she, you know, she cuts her hair and dumps her ID, dumps her phone.
Yeah.
All that stuff.
Which she had kind of already started the process of when they tried to kill her in Chicago. Before she escaped, right? At the payphone. Like, you get that woman's ID and all that stuff. But now...
Yeah.
Now it's like they probably... That feels like that cover is blown and it's time to, like, move on.
And there's no plan. You know, I mean, I think the idea is that she's kind of going off into the ether with, like, no plan. There is a key. And so, you know, I wonder if at some point she realizes, like, Kellerman was... trying to kill her for this key.
Yeah, but I don't know what to do with it.
Do you try?
Who do I go to?
Yeah, what's where on earth? Not to mention that key. She's in New Mexico. That key would be something. Would be a something in Chicago, which
is Chicago or DC. Who knows?
A long way. Yeah.
Fascinating. So.
And in between those scenes, I got pregnant. In between shooting those scenes, well, I found out I was
pregnant.
Better than
during.
I think. Better than during.
That's incredible. Do you remember specific, like, do you remember, I don't know, and you don't have to talk about it, obviously, if you don't want to. Like, do you remember finding out, was it during the shooting of that episode? Do you remember, like, going home?
I think it was. Well, because if I remember right, and I feel like I already told part of this story, but I remember we went in to color my hair. It went black.
Oh, yes. I love this story. Right. So that would have been this.
That was this. So Nono says to me, pick up a pregnancy test on the way home. My mom is in town. I discover I'm pregnant. What's the part of this that we haven't really talked about is I then told no one because, you know, I was weeks pregnant.
And so, yeah.
And it was a first pregnancy. Yeah. And, you know, those don't always stick. And so I was... fine. So I shot this stuff and then very shortly thereafter had a photo shoot for some magazine in New York City. And I went up to the city and we were doing the photo shoot and I got morning sickness for the first time.
Oof.
At the photo shoot.
Oh.
And I'm still not telling anyone I'm pregnant. So I'm at a photo shoot for, I think it was like a men's magazine, Men's Health or something. And I keep running to the bathroom to throw up.
Oh, no.
And I was like, oh, my God, I look like I'm, you know, struggling with an eating disorder here. But I didn't tell anyone because leaks were everywhere with that show. And eventually, when my pregnancy was announced, it was not voluntary.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, it was found out by the press.
Oh, that's awful.
And they called my publicist at the time and were like, we're going to drop this next week. We just want to give Sarah a heads up.
Ugh.
And I was like, you can't drop this. And they were like, we absolutely will. And so I ended up having to call a bunch of people and tell them. But that was that was down the road. So it was just a weird, like, I don't even know if I told production immediately.
I was going to ask.
You know, like, My mom was there. I called my friend Ingrid because she was one of my few friends who'd had a baby before me.
You were young.
I was 29. Yeah. I mean, that, like...
That's young in this business to start with the children.
For my group of friends, you know, it was a very young kind of thing. I don't remember when I told everyone. I remember I told Wentworth because we were super close, and also he was like one of two people I really knew in Dallas. My friend Molly from high school lived in Dallas, and we met for dinner at one point, and I didn't have anything to drink. And she was like, "What's going on?" And I'm like, "Nothing. Wait a minute. You didn't either. And we were pregnant at the same time."
That's amazing.
Molly was like, "Oh my God, we're doing this together." And so we were like pregnancy buddies and, you know, swapping, like, try the ginger chews. Yeah, this week they worked for me in the throwing up.
How old is that child now?
The child is currently 17 and going to university in the fall. Which is so...
Okay. Wow.
So confusing.
I don't think, to make it about me, I don't think I knew when we shot the train stuff, which I feel...
I don't think I did,
Sarah, because I don't remember being... I mean, as we realized in the bathtub scene, maybe I'm just not that careful. But I don't remember having to be...
No, you're totally careful.
I don't remember having... feeling concerned for your safety in that way.
No, but there was a train seat between us.
Right. Also, you're choking me. I didn't do anything to you.
Right. There wasn't... I cannot remember when I told production.
And that's going to be... Especially when we start talking about season three, which obviously as we get into the second half of season two, we will.
Yeah.
It's going to be an interesting... story for you to tell as much of it as you want, because pregnancy was looked on a little differently then.
For actresses,
by studios in the midst of shows.
Yeah, I mean, it was head twisting and confusing.
And we can talk
Wentworth
about it
was amazing.
As much or as little as you want.
No, for sure. I mean, I have a very strong memory of where and when I told the crew. I wonder if I'll know the scene when I see it.
Uh-huh.
But I remember, like, coming to work. And it was after the train stuff. Well after the train stuff. And I think I'd only, like, I was so tight-lipped with it. I don't remember if I told you. I don't think so. I think I just told Wentworth. I think he was the only person on the cast that knew. Because the idea of, like...
Oh.
Having to then deal with everybody's emotions if the pregnancy was miscarried. Like, I just, it was too much.
Pardon me.
And also, like, I was 29 and super healthy. Do you know what I mean? Like, apart from the morning sickness.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't need accommodation. I don't need anybody to.
Pardon my gestational ignorance, but were you showing by the end of the season?
Yeah. Barely. Uh-huh. Barely. Uh-huh. I mean, I was also like, I started before I got pregnant, I was in the best shape of my life. And so, you know, the thing, there's a scene that we'll get to where the fans, the thing they noticed is like, my top got bigger the way happens. And I remember there was something, Wentworth sent me something, some Television Without Pity thing that was like, there was a debate going on about like, did Sarah get a boob job or is she pregnant? Wow. And I was like, well.
The internet.
We'll get to some of that stuff more.
Did you? We can get to some of that stuff. We have more to talk about, but I wanted to talk about Television Without Pity for a second. But maybe we should continue on the episode.
No, please.
I found out about Television Without Pity during season two because Wentworth. I don't remember what we were talking. We were on the phone actually, sharing thoughts about some scene or I don't remember what it was.
Mm-hmm.
We got pretty close and he was like, if you want to feel good about yourself, you should go check this website out and look at this one comment or something.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So it was something about Kellerman being handsome, or some of them calling me the magnificent. They started calling me the magnificent bastard.
Really?
Yeah, which is from one of my favorite movies. It's from Patton.
The magnificent bastard. That Rommel. Might be all I ever call you.
He calls again. Rommel. He's like, you magnificent bastard. You know, it's like. But then I started reading Television Without Pity quite a bit, and then I thought, this isn't good for me.
That's not good for you.
No. But it was really the beginning of that, and I remember listening to Craig Wright and John August's podcast, the screenwriting podcast.
Oh, yeah.
And they had a woman on there who's now a screenwriter, I think, but she wrote for Television Without Pity and then became like the writer at Gawker. And she talked about, I didn't realize how television, like all those Television Without Pity writers who were like in their early 20s and just basically just blogging, a lot of them went on to be critics and writers. And that it was really one of the first online forums for that kind of interaction and that kind of like half snarky, half fun recapping.
Because what was their tagline? Spare the snark, spoil the networks.
Something like
that. It was so snarky.
And I also knew.
But it was also smart.
Very smart. And I also knew that the networks read it.
Yeah.
I knew that it became important to them. And it was before, you know, it was before that any kind of algorithmic tracking of that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And looking back on it, like as we've talked about so many times, like the confluence of this show and the internet kind of developing at the same time had definitely had an effect. Did you read any of that stuff?
Wentworth would send me stuff periodically. I think season one, I was fascinated, but I don't read reviews, and it very quickly became, I was like, this isn't good for me.
Yeah.
And to be honest, it wasn't good for me because a lot of it was positive.
Yeah.
And I was like, I could get addicted to this.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden, I just want people to love
constant
me.
Constant juice.
Yeah, it's a
dangerous.
It's the wrong kind of dopamine.
Yeah, that's right.
Not that there are different kinds of dopamine, but
I know what you mean.
It also, you know, I'll be honest. I also backed away from it at a certain point because I saw it hurting him.
Oh.
You know, like he was really isolated in Dallas, and like socially. He didn't really participate much outside of hanging out with you or hanging out with me. And so, you know, like as Lane was talking about, like the guys all just got super tight and they had this, you know, kind of like deep social life with each other and whatever. And there's no doubt in my mind Wentworth would have been welcome there. But it just wasn't his scene.
Oh, he wasn't.
You know,
yeah,
and
he
so
wasn't comfortable
he chose to not participate in that. And so Dallas specifically was quite isolating.
Yeah.
Especially because he was so famous.
Yeah.
From the jump.
Yeah.
As soon as we got there. And we weren't sequestered in the prison anymore. We were out shooting on location and fans
different
would show
and
up
different,
and
different vibes in Dallas for sure.
100%. So I worried about Television Without Pity with him and I was like, I'm gonna back off of this thing because I just, you know. I didn't like that sometimes it hurt him.
Have you ever eaten an apple with a knife like Kellerman does?
Every time we go hiking, my husband will serve up an apple with a knife.
Sure.
I don't know that I've done it personally. Was it a choice based in...
I have no recollection. I can't, it doesn't... I know that at
it looks
one
fucking cool.
point, I got into knives a little bit.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense in Dallas because there were all those like...
Yeah.
I went to my first gun show.
And I'm a camp, you know, I go camping. And so I was into like these Gerber knives and shit. But I can't, it just doesn't seem, I think that's a Zach Estrin thing. I honestly believe it's one of those things that
might
they put in
the script.
Yeah. I can't.
It does tell a story.
Uh-huh. It seems Kellerman-y to me. I don't object to it. But I don't think it's something I would have been like.
Do you eat apples with knives?
Yes.
Oh, I buy that.
Not like that.
Oh.
You're not supposed to cut
How else do you eat an apple with a knife?
Don't cut towards your own thumb.
I see. I will say, it was the moment where I was like, this is a different Kellerman.
Oh, that's interesting.
It was such a different physical piece of business that I loved it. I'm really here for the new Kellerman.
He's really letting loose.
Well, and also, like, boy, did he heal quick. You know, like him running around, like he's got a burn.
Yeah, well.
He's got an iron burn from here to here.
I mean.
And at no point is he even like.
Ointment.
Like, so, do you have any Neosporin? Not that there was a place for it, but it's, you know, you talk about this a lot, like TV.
Healing.
Healing properties. Yeah. Like even his ability, like the gun that he's setting up, you would have to have here, right?
Yeah,
the
big long hurt. Gun.
It would hurt like crazy.
I mean, that's a third degree burn, right?
I mean, probably the buttons have melted to your
skin.
Oh,
golly. Okay. Yeah.
Right?
It's horrible.
Because
Heather,
do you remember
Heather?
We can keep going on this. Heather Makeup.
Heather Makeup.
Oh, my gosh. She was so sweet.
So sweet and kind of a genius.
Loved her.
Kind of a prosthetic.
With prosthetics?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Silicon genius. And she built like creatures. And would go to creature shows, and she was one of those
people.
Oh,
no way.
Yeah. She was really, really
talented. I loved Heather.
Yeah.
Heather, wherever you are, we love you so much. Hey, we've got a couple of fan questions.
Yeah, let's take a quick break and come back.
Do you want to take a little break?
Yeah.
And then, okay, cool.
All right, be right back.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariana. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
We're back. Couple of fan questions, and also we've got a call-in question this week.
Oh, fantastic. All right.
Okay, I'm going to ask you this one. At Mimoise, Mimoise?
Okay.
M-E-M-O-I-Z-E, says, my favorite character is D.B. Cooper. Who do you think truly deserved his money in the end?
The cat.
Strong
Marilyn.
That.
Marilyn.
Oh, what's Marilyn going to do with $5 million?
Eat well, sleep well.
Just have
warm.
Like
all the posts.
Raw tuna.
Yeah, whatever.
Every day.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a good answer.
Who do you think?
Well, he said something about finding his daughter. Like, there's a version out there to me where they somehow find Westmoreland's daughter and show up. And she hides them and falls in love with Lincoln or something. I don't know. Like, I think after season one, I sort of expected there to be a Westmoreland's daughter component of this. I think at some point, maybe Michael sends some. I can't remember what happens with it. But it does seem fair that it would go to her. That's not a very exciting answer, though.
Yeah, that's a good answer.
She's never on camera.
Here's a good question for you. At Gracerson 8 asks, why do you think Sarah is drawn towards Michael? No, Sarah, going back. Gracerson 8 asks, what do you think Sarah is drawn towards in Michael and vice versa? What keeps him tethered through everything they go through? Do you think that if it weren't for the danger of their circumstances and her father's death, they would have kept that connection? It's a good question.
It is a good question. I mean, I think Sarah starts season two being like, got to get over this guy, got to move on. One by one, things get taken away from her where he becomes her only option. But I think it happens in this episode, and it happens off camera because there's too much other stuff happening.
Uh-huh.
I think. But I think she kind of goes, no, I want to be. I, I don't know. I'm torn. When she says I need you, there's a part of me Monday morning quarterbacking 20 years later.
Yeah.
That thinks she's genuinely like, no, I want to be with him. And there's another part of me that thinks she's not thinking past.
I need you to get out of this pickle.
I just need to stay alive, and you're the only person I can trust. And I think what keeps them tethered is that he does become the only person he can trust, she can trust. Mm. Having betrayed her in the biggest way, which is, I need you to leave the door open. But I think once she sees that there's something behind that, which is, I'm here for my brother.
Mm-hmm.
There's proof that he was, you know, once he gets her on side with the evidence that Lincoln was set up. I think her moral universe kind of collapses into, you know, you've told me, what's that line in Ocean's 11? You're a liar and a thief. I only ever lied about being a thief. You know, it's like you lied once and it was big.
But it was the only lie. Everything else has been true.
It was the only lie. Yeah, and the rest of it, you know, you seem to be the guy. Okay, one last question to you from Living Correct, at Living Correct, which is a general Dallas question, just because I know you did some exploring. It says, did you ever make it over to Fort Worth for filming or fun local exploration?
Yes, I did, and I really liked Fort Worth. I was shocked at how different it was in Dallas.
Yeah.
It's really a cowboy town, and I went to an amazing flea market.
Oh.
No. And I bought a 1950s or 60s huge tabletop phonograph. It must have been 5 to 6 feet long. You know, with speakers in the cabinet lift up, and I bought a bunch of records. And then when it was time to go back to LA, I was like, yeah, I'm not gonna. I know.
And you left it?
It was like $120. It's gotta be worth thousands of dollars. It was really dumb.
Oh my God.
Dumb move. I don't know. I think I couldn't figure out how to get it back, or I was lazy, most likely just laziness.
So did you give it to anybody?
I did. I gave it to, I think, Derek Phillips and Steve Walters came and got it. I think that's my recollection.
That's cool.
Maybe they may have come gotten other stuff. I don't know.
They're going to call you and they're like, that's absolutely not true. I don't have it.
All right, we have a call-in question this week.
We've got a call-in question. Take it away, Paul.
Our call-in question this week is, what is your least favorite plot twist of season 2 so far? What would you change? For instance, maybe you wish Geary hadn't been killed and instead he was somewhere in a casino at Atlantic City where he loses all his money to the mafia and ends up having worked for Tony Soprano, laying the groundwork for the spinoff, The Altos. Hilarious.
Hilarious, but I did write it this morning
it's
and
very
I want
funny.
To read it.
You'll have better ideas. I like it. I like Geary becoming an Atlantic City crime boss. We want to hear your ideas. Please, what should have been different plot twist-wise in season 2? We want to hear them. Leave us a message at 401-3P-BREAK, or you can email us at pbpodcast@calibre-studio.com.
Thank you to all our Fishes folks and friends for listening. As always, we invite you to check out our Watch Party episodes, where you can watch the show with our real-time commentary.
Yeah.
Or just listening to us breathing in your ear.
Yeah,
because we watched the show.
We were absolutely transfixed this time.
We were actually kind of riveted on this one. And you can join our watch parties on the Patreon link in the show page, wherever you're listening right now, or on the link in the show's Instagram bio.
Also, for those of you who prefer a language other than English or just want to see video of us talking, we're on YouTube at Prison Break Podcast on YouTube. Please join us.
Yeah. Thanks for being here, guys.
Yes.
You're great.
Thank you for being with us. And as Sarah wrote, it's true. We love and cherish you.
We love and cherish you. I write the scripts and Paul does the editing. Sorry. If you don't like what we have to say, it's my fault.
Or the editing, because I'm terrible at it. So thank you for operation here.
We're DIYing.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what, Paul?
What?
Prison Breaking with Sarah and Paul is a Calibre Studio production.
Oh my gosh. Your hosts have been inmates. Yeah. Sarah Winkalis and Paul Edelstein.
Well, that's wild because our prison warden is producer Ben.
Well, but I want to tell you that the frontman of our Jailhouse Rock band is Paul Edelstein, who made the music.
But before you do, let me tell you that our prison yard tattoo artist, logo, and brand designer is John Nunziato and Little Big Brands. Check him out at www.littlebigbrands.com.
I can hear that, but I have to tell you to follow us on Instagram and YouTube at Prison Break Podcast. Email us at pbpodcast@calibre-studio.com and call us at 401-3-PBREAK.
Yes, and Prison Breaking with Sarah and Paul has been a Calibre Studio production. Genuinely, thank you for listening. We're a little unhinged this week.
Yes. But
we,
unhingy stuff.
We trust you to just hang with us.
Wow.
Or not. That's fine, too.
Thank you for being here.
Bye.
We'll talk to you soon. Bye.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.